Welcome, shell-shocked gamers, to episode 136 of the Nerd Extravaganza Podcast, a podcast that prides itself on neutral reporting from war zones everywhere. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Cam.
And in this episode, our special war correspondent will be bringing you an update from the battlefield of the console wars for an updated view on where things stand in that worldwide struggle for dominance. But first, we'll kick things off in our usual, non-warlike fashion, with our hippy-dippy, weekly-geekly, geekly-weekly update. Peace-loving Cam, man. What have you been up to, brother?
Oh, man, I can't remember. No. It was a pretty eventful weekend. There was a pretty good gaming event at the Adventure Game Store Saturday night. It was a Come Play What You Got for Christmas event. So did some gaming there Saturday night. That was a good time. Sunday, spent some time, playing, one of my consoles and, playing through some of the games I got for Christmas. And, Sunday night, did some more gaming at the, one of the local, pubs, here, the Falcon Pub, which is, an event that's also sponsored by the Adventure Game Store. So, got some more gaming in Sunday night. And that's about it.
Pretty succinct and to the point, and gaming intensive, which is always a plus.
Very much so.
What about you, Brian?
Well, aside from most of the gaming that Cam did, I also did. I had another fun adventure with my buddy who does the cosplay photography. Sunday, I went to this tiny little park on the water in Orlando and shot two Lolitas that were dressed up as, I don't know the characters, they were Hello Kitty's twin stars. And it was a great park for it. It was, there was a Colosseum, pillars, and broken roof monument that had been donated by somebody. And that was mossy and viney. It looked really killer and very gothy, which was, you know, cool. I think those make great black and white photos for Facebook.
That sounds pretty awesome, actually.
It was good.
Is there anything else?
Cosplay photography, gaming, and a lot of Asian food, actually.
Oh, yeah, very nice.
Sounds good. Always good.
Okay, I guess that brings it around to me, and I will start by saying that I think this is geeky. It sure feels geeky. I am clearing out all of my old computers and hardware and routers and stuff, which I have in abundance, unfortunately, and making room for maybe a hardware refresh that's coming my way. We'll see what the new year brings. But in doing so, I needed to get rid of these electronics. I don't want to throw them in the garbage. So I went and turned them into a recycling place that specializes in recycling electronics. And there was something about going to a warehouse just full of pallets of all this e-waste that's going to be repurposed, reused, refurbished, what have you, that, I don't know. I kind of thought it was awesome. I feel like it's geeky because I got a thrill out of it. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. I mean, that's, and I commend you, Tom, for, you know, taking that extra step and taking it to an actual place that'll recycle it rather than just dumping it in a dumpster or throwing it on the curb like most people.
Thanks, Cam. I appreciate that. apart from that, on the more traditionally geeky side of things, I didn't mention this in my last update, but I will now. Just prior to Christmas, actually it was Christmas Eve, I enjoyed a wonderful game known as the Ravenloft board game. May not be the exact title, but basically it plays out kind of like Arkham Horror and really does a good job of getting across the legendary difficulty of the Ravenloft campaign setting, module setting, I guess I should say, in that you are like right on the verge of death and the game is just dealing you out one setback after another as you're trying to find these special artifacts or enemies within the castle. So I recommend it. If you want a challenge, it was pretty tough. Brian, it kind of reminded me of that Walking Dead game we got our asses kicked playing a couple of years back, if you remember that at all.
I do remember that. That was one of the quickest games I've ever played.
Yeah. We won both scenarios in this case, so hooray for us. But man, I really felt like we were like doomed. It was brutal. I think that pretty much concludes my update, apart from also going to the Adventure Game Store, but being so exhausted from my road trip home that I didn't get to play too much. Just kind of hung out with my friends and bailed. But nevertheless, always fun to pay a visit to our gaming haunt.
Always a good time.
Yes, sir. Updates now being out of the way, I think it's time for our war correspondents to report in with some non-warfare news, or maybe warfare news, however you want to roll with it. You're the correspondent. I'm just the guy at the desk listening to what you have to say. So, special correspondent Cam, why don't you go first, man? What's new in news with our nude extravaganza segment?
Tom, you are a great anchor, and I will deliver you some news. The first piece of news I have is, you guys remember Play-Doh, of course, I'm sure, right?
Yep.
That fun clay, semi, non-toxic substance that we all played with as a kid. It appears that they have had to recall a recent toy set that they have with Play-Doh because there's this tube-like injector that is meant to mold the Play-Doh and, you know, put it into different ways of shapes and things like that, that looks surprisingly similar to a penis. So many parents were up in arms about that. If you just Google Play-Doh penis, I'm sure you'll see, along with some probably other good stuff as well. It's pretty funny. I mean, I don't know how it got past, I don't know how it got through R&D, let alone through, you know, quality and all the tests. I'm sure a company that size goes through, Hasbro. So that is that. Let's see. Bitcoin. Any of you guys own Bitcoin?
I don't.
Well, that is good because Bitcoin was the world's worst performing currency this year.
Oh.
Ouch. Year ending 2014. Yeah. And I know a lot of people that were pretty big on Bitcoin last year. So they're probably stuck holding the bag this year. And, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, the consoles and Sony and Microsoft later on in the show. But this is actually more of a Walmart story than a PlayStation Sony story. Apparently a man bought a PS4 for Christmas. And when he took it home and opened up the box, there were two bags of rocks in the box.
Oh,
So it wasn't like he just bought it off the street. He bought it from the store. Apparently, I guess someone had either tampered with the box in the Walmart or returned it, and he ended up buying it and getting 2 pounds of rocks instead of a PS4. The good news is that, you know, Walmart did the right thing, stepped up, and gave him a new PlayStation. But it would have been a pretty poor Christmas if they didn't for him. And that's all the news I have.
So to summarize, Play-Doh dicks, which I did see come across in my Facebook feed, I'm happy to report.
Yeah.
Bitcoin not being a currency that inspires confidence.
Right.
And Ganzacloss sometimes will give you a box of rocks if you're not good.
Yeah, you know, it might have been the 2014 version of Cole for this guy, but Walmart bailed him out.
Good on you, Walmart. You may not pay a living wage, but you do good stuff for your customers at times.
or do stuff to avoid PR hits. You know,
right, right, right. The living wage obviously not really mattering that much, apparently. Awesome. Brian, over to you. Got some news from the field for us?
I am just all about hackers lately. I follow this stuff. I don't know why. It doesn't affect me at all. I have a PlayStation 4, and I currently have a PlayStation 4 game to play, thank you again. But I have not used the system or PSN for ages and ages before that. Apparently, PS Network and Xbox Live were down for Christmas, just like some hackers had threatened. In and of itself, a terrible thing, but apparently there's a little bit more to it. Kim.com of Mega Upload fame bribed the hacker group to stop their attack and let people play. I'm a little torn on that because it's kind of cool of him, but I really hate that precedent.
I was wondering about that because I heard Storage mentioned some mainstream news outfit was reporting on it, not the new extravaganza, obviously, and they kind of mixed that story up. They were like, the hackers used online storage to stop the thing, and like I was like, what? That doesn't make any sense. So they were bribed with online storage.
The details are hard to get straight, I guess, but it looks like they were bribed with mega upload, whatever it's called these days, premium passes for life, as long as they promise not to attack PSN and Xbox so Kim.com and his kid can play.
Wow, I'm going to have to get into the hacking business so I can get free gifts. Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, every Christmas I'm just going to, you know, try to get some free stuff. If, you know, I'm sure there are plenty of people out there who want their kids to play games that are willing to give, you know, give up a pretty ransom.
I wonder when it's going to stop, too, because, you know, they're blaming Lizard Squad. I have no idea. Lizard Squad did it this year. Why won't someone else do it next year?
That's a good point. I mean, and as you said, the precedent, we're setting a precedent here that's probably not a good one to set. Yeah, I don't know. What do you guys what do you guys want for Christmas next year? Let's get some hacking going. You don't even need, you just have to do a denial of service attack, right?
DDoS? DDoS? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I understand there's illegal software you can download to help with that. Let's get it going, man. I don't know. I think I want I want free passes to all the Star Wars movies, so let's go after Lucasfilm or
we may have a problem.
Oh, you don't want that as a prize.
Oh, boy.
You fools have no idea what you're asking for. No problem. Enjoy the movies.
Right. Oh, man. Well, yeah, no, but, yeah, I mean, you know, obviously we're joking, but, you know, Brian, I'm right there with you. You can't negotiate with terrorists. I mean, that sets a bad precedent, I think. You know, when's it going to stop now, you know?
I thought it was bad enough when they were threatening to kill people. That's at least a hard decision to make, but now they're just like, well, you know, we're going to make your brats cry for a little while.
That's pretty crappy. Ruining people's fun.
Yeah, especially on Christmas. Bah, humbug.
No kidding. Appropriate, though, given tonight's topic. Any other news, sir, before we transition into tonight's feature story?
No other news.
All right, then tonight's hard-hitting piece of original nerdstravaganza discussion slash not-at-all journalism centers on the console wars, and we're going to give you an update from the field thanks to our special war correspondents, Cam and Brian. Guys, I hope you're not taking too much fire out there.
Just hopped off the chopper.
We will not require sound effects, but feel free. So, yeah, guys, we have definitely talked about the console wars back when this generation got going, and things have changed somewhat, I would say, and I would like to hear your perspectives about where things are versus where you thought they were, well, back at the dawn of this particular era, or really at any arbitrary point in time when you feel things were markedly different. So, Cam, I don't think I've heard from you necessarily on this issue yet, and I know you have definitely been leveling some pretty deserved criticism at Sony lately. Why don't you weigh in first?
Yeah, Tom, obviously I pick on Sony every once a week at least. But I don't have an issue with the console. You know, I wish I did, but I don't have an actual issue with the console. I'm actually pretty bitter. I think I mentioned before on a previous episode that when the previous gen came out, I bought the PlayStation and my brother bought the Xbox. And I was hacked off at Sony then because it took them forever to get any decent titles out. So my brother had the Xbox and was playing all these great games, and I was stuck with, you know, the PlayStation and just the two crappy games. This generation, we swapped. I got the Xbox, he got the PlayStation, and now, like, I'm hacked off at Sony again because now they have a bunch of games and Xbox doesn't. So I'm stuck in the same scenario with you know, after I switch sides. But that's my only gripe in terms of the console. I pick on them because of their lack of security, and, you know, it seems like a kindergarten can hack them. But, and, you know, obviously this whole interview thing and, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, my brother's PlayStation is great. A lot of the games are great. I can't, you know, there's a reason why PlayStation is outselling Xbox 2-1, you know, over the last year or two. And that's sort of where I come down. I mean, I think their console is great. They just need to shore up their security and, you know, make sure I don't get hacked every time I try to log on.
Yeah, Sony seemed to have been, they seem to have borne a disproportionate share of the hacking burden. I mean, I don't think, have there been nearly as many highly publicized, well, they're definitely not as damaging incidents on the Microsoft side of things, right? I mean, they've had the latest DDoS stuff, but nobody has compromised accounts, right?
Yeah, I mean, they got hit on Christmas Day, just like Sony did, but they were back up a lot sooner, I believe. And I don't think they did any, I don't think that was a function of the Kim.com negotiation. I think they just, you know, had a better response time. Yeah, certainly Sony is just taking all of the bad PR. I don't know if that's because Microsoft has, you know, a better PR machine, or it's just because their you know, PlayStation's reactions are just absurd.
I think part of Sony's problem is there's really solid evidence out there that their network security was just about 5 years old, and that when their IT staff came to them and said, wow, we're really old, we need to upgrade this and this and this, or we're susceptible to attack, they asked how much it was and decided that was too much.
Yeah, and then there was that great move of having a folder labeled passwords.
Exactly. I mean, they were trying.
So, yeah, I mean, I can understand, you know, making the cost-benefit decision. You know, bean counters are everywhere in any major corporation, so I sort of get that. But, I mean, there's just no excuse for the passwords folder.
So let me ask you guys this. The particulars aside, has Sony's apparent vulnerability to mischief in any way affected their relative position in the console wars? Like, and we can get to Microsoft in a minute, but from what I understand, Microsoft has gained some ground recently, at least in the US. Could that have anything to do with this stuff, or is it mainly down to other factors such as price cuts?
I think that the price cuts help. I think that the bad publicity on PlayStation's part helps Microsoft as well. I think if you really look deeper into what's really driving sales, and we'll get into this when we talk about the Wii U, I think it is because Xbox has become a lot more open to indie game developers and letting them on their network. That's really, I think, what put PlayStation ahead in the very beginning. Just from the beginning, they let the indie game developers come in, and they scored a ton of really cool games that a lot of people liked, and they were exclusive to PlayStation. So you had to have PlayStation to play them. And that's really what jumped them out ahead. I think over the last year or so, Xbox has really pushed into that realm. And I think that's why you're seeing a spike in their sales.
So running towards indie developers and kind of opening up the platform, whereas they were kind of coming across as a little obstinate about that early on. Like they were just kind of discounting the importance of that, right?
Well, yeah. And they were just, you know, they were being Microsoft. I mean, they wanted to, you know, have a closed box system and charge you for everything, which I think the landscape of gaming at this point is nowhere near that anymore. I mean, it's just proven over the last 5 years that you've got to be open to the indie developers, and you've got to be open to all sorts of different solutions, whether it be, you know, console through the TV now, which we talked about last week, or, you know, through a tablet.
Okay. So regardless, not necessarily a result of this hacking stuff. It's definitely a change in strategy on Microsoft's end, in your opinion.
I think that's probably the major portion of it, but I definitely think the poor publicity on Sony's part helped them as well.
Special correspondent Brian, do you concur?
No. I have to ask, November, the Christmas shopping season, was the first month they actually outsold PlayStation 4. Is that correct?
I would believe that.
It's either the first or it's the greatest, because they did outsell them by almost like 500,000 units.
Okay.
So, way to go. But it's also during a time when Sony is just week after week after week in the headlines for some god-awful faux pas. The Xbox was on sale everywhere. I think it was $329 for two controllers, two games, a year of Xbox Live, and the console. So that's like $200 off for the Christmas season.
Wow. Yeah, okay.
And it is the season when less educated buyers are doing most of the shopping.
I see. So a buyer walks in, oh, the prices are comparable, this seems like a better deal, and I've heard some stuff about Sony. Like, all that kind of comes into the buying decision?
Could be.
So it could have had an effect. Interesting. What do you think of that, Cam? Is that plausible?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I can't give you a quantifiable number as to, you know, what affected what. But yeah, I mean, Brian makes a great point. I think all three of us had actually talked about this a couple months ago when that sale first came out. I mean, it's like, even people who know about consoles, I mean, how can you pass that up? But so yeah, I mean, I'm sure that drove sales a lot. It's just, you know, I think though, for the most part, gamers are pretty savvy and they know what they want to play and, you know, how they want to deliver to them. Because obviously a PC gamer isn't going to care. A kid that just plays on a tablet really probably isn't going to care until someone, you know, educates them or pushes them in the direction, sort of like your friend's kid, Tom, that we've talked about before. Whereas the seasoned gamer knows, like, all right, these are the games I want to play. What's my best solution to get to those games? And what's my best solution in terms of how I like to play? You know, am I a campaign person? Do I like to play online, multiplayer, whatever it is? And so I think Microsoft stepping up their game in terms of the game exclusives and the indie games drove a lot of those sales. But I also definitely have to concede Brian's point that, yeah, there are a bunch of dummies just walking in there, you know, knowing that they want to buy something for someone for Christmas. And okay, this system is $330 as opposed to $450 or $500, and it seems like I get a lot more bang for my buck.
Okay, so basically Sony doing themselves no favors and Microsoft positioning themselves as very consumer-friendly this time around, in addition to appealing to maybe more core gamers by opening up to independent quirky games that people like us might like.
Right.
Very nice. So, with all that said, it seems like we definitely all agree that Microsoft has made a comeback, or at least in this last quarter or month or whatever, has come charging back into it. Where do we stand? I think the last time we visited this issue, Sony was the clear, like, leader, and it looked like they were going to win this one. What do you think now?
I mean, if you're looking just at pure numbers, I think the forecast I looked at before today was, I think by September, Sony had already sold 14 million units for 2014. And at that same time, Microsoft had only shipped about 7 million. So we're not even talking sales. I mean, they shipped 7 million. You know, that's about a 2-to-1 if you're assuming that all of those units got sold by that Microsoft shipped. You know, clearly PlayStation 1, in terms of sheer numbers, whether that's going to, you know, whether their uptick is going to continue into 2015, that remains to be seen.
So still a lot of ground to cover, and Sony is not in danger, but they definitely need to get their act together.
Yeah, they should be looking over their shoulder for sure.
Brian?
I'm a little scared for Sony because the last couple of big shifts in the industry were pure hubris. Once upon a time, Sony thought they could not be touched, so they came out with a turd that was a PlayStation 3 and they got their asses kicked. And then Microsoft thought they couldn't be touched because they were coming off the Xbox 360. And I really think the Xbox One is underperforming because they didn't try as hard as they should have. So I really hope we're not seeing a shorter version of that. I really hope the PlayStation 4 didn't give anybody a overconfidence to let the other guy run away with it. This indie market that Cam is talking about is a big deal, and I hope they see what's happening, and I hope they get with it.
So you're still in Sony's camp, right? I know Microsoft kind of turned you right off with their tactics, their sort of anti-consumer stance early on, so you're still rooting for Sony.
You're kind of asking me to pick one of these three things instead of saying, what do you hope happens?
yeah, okay, you're right, that's fair. I am, so...
I think they're doing the best, but I have never been so unhappy with video gaming.
So, and that's your real answer. The state of gaming is not one that pleases you no matter what console you happen to own.
Currently, yes.
Ah, okay. That's too bad.
I would agree with Brian 100%, and I think, as we discussed, you know, in some previous episodes, why you might be seeing such a large uptick in pen and paper and tabletop gaming. I definitely think that's a factor because, you know, these games, it's so video games now are so formulaic, it just doesn't leave any room for imagination, except for those indie games. But a lot of pen and paper, you know, role players and tabletop gamers are not going to buy a console just because you can play one or two indie games. I mean, you know, I could download those on my computer or on a tablet. You know, if you really want a rich experience an in-depth exploration type game or, you know, something like that, you're just not going to find that these days. You're going to find first-person shooters and a couple of decent campaign type games like Destiny or, you know, whatever it is. And that's it, you know, so there's really, the landscape is pretty sparse.
So things come back around to a previous discussion we had about tabletop gaming, gaining market share among gamers, using that term very broadly, at the expense of video gaming. And yeah, I don't know, you kind of make a case for it. Brian, do you think that this is all to tabletop's benefit?
I'm still very curious about the sales, just because it is so hard to see correlation in such a small sample. But tabletop's definitely doing better, and role-playing is doing better than ever. I think this latest edition of Dungeons & Dragons is just the best thing ever lately.
It's quite good. It's quite good, and I think going away from the video gaming aspects has helped the game. Like, you're no longer, like, clicking buttons to do your dailies, etc.
That was the worst idea for a pen and paper ever.
Yeah, and we're referring, of course, to D&D 4th Edition, which played like an MMO, and I guess was made as a companion, or an intro to, or something that you would be introduced to from the Dungeons & Dragons Online game, right?
Yeah, they wanted it to be kind of like the same experience, which... Oi.
Oi is right. I don't know. I didn't hate it, but didn't love it. I don't really like the concept of dailies in a pen and paper RPG. So let's step back over to video games for a minute. And I'm sure it's no accident that none of you have mentioned this, because I seem to be the only one who kind of counts them as part of this generation, and probably not for no reason. But what do you guys think of Nintendo? What's your perception of how Nintendo is doing these days?
Brian, why don't you take this one first? Because I'm sort of exasperated with them.
Again, personally, I like what they're doing, but I think it's terrible for a company. You cannot appeal to the same niche audience you appealed to in 1995 and expect to go up against these people that are selling, you know, a million consoles a month.
Yeah, and their launch, you know, a year or two ago was just a disaster. They couldn't get the operating system right. They couldn't get the hardware right. I think they turned that around, you know, as recently as about a year or so ago, a year and a half ago. They also sort of jumped on the indie game bandwagon, and that helped them a little bit. The one thing I will say that I like about them is that they're putting out some pretty good titles, and they're also really, really, and I think you mentioned this for last episode, Tom, with your in your Christmas update. I really like the interoperability features they have between the games, like with the amiibos and things like that. I think that's a really cool feature. But whether that will say, you know, will let them gain any market share or, you know, even save them, I don't know.
Yeah, I'll pipe up here as the resident Nintendo fanboy. When we talk about the console wars, it's cool to look at these competing companies and maybe take a side or not root for either side or recognize that they all kind of suck right now. But I have to look at Nintendo from the perspective of a Nintendo gamer, as somebody that owns their handheld and owns their console. For me, it's been great. They're stepping it up. They're bringing out good games. I'm happy. Now, if I was an investor in Nintendo and I came in as an investor under the delusion that they would repeat the success they had with the Wii, I might be pissed, because millions per week or whatever or per month or whatever Brian cited is like not much of an exaggeration for, well, maybe, but whatever. Suffice to say that the volume sold by Sony and Microsoft eclipses that sold by Nintendo. And that's a pretty big change in relative market share over what happened with the Wii. So I don't know, if you're an investor and you, let's say you didn't know about games, you're not into gaming, you just saw Nintendo performing one way and now you come in and they're performing this way, where do you guys think you would be in terms of your sentiment and your confidence?
Wow. You know, I think you're seeing a little bit of hope now. I think you probably were ready to, you know, pull the plug or jump out a window a year and a half, 2 years ago. I think you're seeing a bit of a turnaround now. If I was an investor, it's a hold at this point just to see what happens, because, you know, I don't know that it can get any worse than it was, but, you know, I still think it's probably a dog.
What about you, Brian?
Okay. So help me out. Xbox One was pretty much half price, tons of pack-ins, constantly in the news, advertising all over, and had, I mean, Destiny. What else? No other big names?
That's fair, yeah.
Sold 1.2 million?
Yes, yes, yes.
PlayStation 4 just being harangued in the media, by far more expensive. Had the exact same game come out for it, Destiny is all they have, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah.
800,000 units?
Yes, yes, yes.
Nintendo had Pokemon, Super Smash Brothers, the new Donkey Kong, Mario Kart, and the Amiibo craze. 700,000 units sold.
Yeah, I mean, Sony basically shit the bed and had the worst PR ever, and they still beat them by 100,000 units.
And that's probably the best month they're going to have for a long time. I mean, unless they bring out... Well, shit, I forgot the new Zelda game was available, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Hyrule was DLC, I think, wasn't it?
The Hyrule Warriors, yeah.
Yeah, Hyrule Warriors, it's more of a Dynasty Warriors with a Zelda skin on it. It's an enjoyable game. I wouldn't call it a Zelda proper, but yeah, okay. A strong software lineup, and they came close to matching, for that time period, the number two. Now, the cool, detached, professional reporter that I am and news anchor says, well, yeah, you make a good point. I mean, even with that strong showing, they did not dethrone Sony for the number two console seller spot. But the Nintendo fanboy in me is like, oh, man, they almost sold as much as Sony.
Well, Tom, let me ask you this. What do you think about the actual, because I know you're a tech guru, and I come to you with all my tech questions. What do you think about the actual tech of Nintendo compared to the Microsoft and PlayStation consoles?
In terms of their hardware power and that kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me they're a bit behind the times, no?
They are. They put out a relative, and this is me speaking as just kind of an informed consumer. I studied computer science, not computer engineering, so I'm not qualified to talk about hardware. But they put out a fairly limited hardware set in terms of its capabilities as far as graphic power. I mean, it was basically would have been top of the heap last generation, or at least hanging with those systems. Where they spent the money was on the, I don't want to say gimmicks, but the alternative control schemes, you know, the handheld tablet controller, the built-in reader that you can read the Amiibos in with. So they put their own spin on things instead of just opting for, like, some more horsepower under the hood, which is what the other consoles did. The other consoles rinse, repeat, add horsepower. They basically did what console makers do every generation, which is beef up horsepower. Nintendo, and maybe here's where hubris comes in again, thought that they could do a Wii again. Like, look, the Wii, you know, had the power of maybe the original Xbox or something like that.
Right.
And look how well we did with it. But the Wii was a bubble. The Wii was a hot consumer gadget. As I told a friend today when I was talking about this, the Wii was their Cabbage Patch doll. Like, it happened to be the hot item.
Right.
And they had runaway success with it. And they assumed they could repeat that success with a weaker console. I don't think when you're trying to play the same game as the other guys, that's such a wise move. But to answer your question a little more succinctly, the hardware is definitely underpowered if you just want to go nuts and bolts versus the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One.
Right. And I mean, I think they're trying to mask that with the, you know, cross, I guess, I don't want to say cross platform, but the you know, the cross operability of the different things that they, you know, they've come out with, like those little figures that you can like take to your friend's house and, you know, start playing there with, you know, basically just pick up right where you left off from your console and take, you know, I mean, I think they're trying to mask the behind the times, hardware, but, I feel like the console's aging a little bit.
It's a really fancy, really expensive thumb drive.
Yeah. Yeah. Nintendo on a pig. You know?
Nintendo's CEO, I think somebody, I saw the headline and did not read the article, unfortunately, but some bigwig at Nintendo was quoted recently as saying, "We're playing our own game," which is definitely a good way to rationalize this, because you cannot really play the other game. You can't play the "we have the beefier hardware" game with these guys. Like, that's, you're locked in. This is what you got.
Right.
But Nintendo has one thing going for them, and that they have a stable of very popular franchises and characters. I've said this before, I'll say it again, almost Disney level in how recognized they are, right? Mario's huge. Everybody knows Mario. And if you want to play a Mario game, you got to buy a Nintendo system. And for, hey, sure.
But who wants to play a Mario game?
700,000 people want to play, man. What are you talking about?
No, I do want to play a Mario game, but I don't want to buy a Wii U to do it.
That's well, now that's as, yeah. And I think Brian will conclude, and maybe this is your point, Brian. That's kind of the rub, right?
Yeah.
I had fun with that. I don't even remember which version it was, but it was for the Wii U, because I remember my role was clicking the stylus on the screen every once in a while to make sure you didn't fall to your doom.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. That was on the Wii U. That was the new Super Mario Brothers U that we played together, yes. Right, so Nintendo's playing their own game, and in the game Nintendo's playing, you want their characters. You want to play on their hardware to get their characters, and they're now going after that Skylanders and Disney Infinity money with these amiibos. For the moment, they let you unlock features in games. For the moment, they let you train up a character in Smash Brothers and take it to your friend's house. But it's not inconceivable that they could then be introduced in some sort of Skylanders-type game down the line. It's not inconceivable that we could not see, and to me this is the real cash cow, a line of Pokemon amiibos, which basically there would be hundreds of, and every time everyone that rolled off the assembly line, I mean, would just transmute into cash, okay? So, Nintendo's game could well be a successful one. That's kind of my point.
I don't think they're going to lose money from all of this, but I don't think they're ever going to get second place. Or first, for that matter.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And if we're talking about the console wars as we understand it, you know, battle for console supremacy, I don't see Nintendo winning this one. I mean, they're gonna, hanging in third, being there, being relevant after a fashion to the, you know, until the end of this generation, I think would be a win for them. I don't see Nintendo going out of business. I definitely never saw Nintendo becoming a software company. People were pronouncing their death like 2 months after the Wii U came out. Oh, they're gonna go the Sega route. I never thought that was gonna happen. Nintendo has a huge war chest. They're much better structured. I don't believe they carry a huge amount of debt that they spend all their money servicing or anything like that. I think Nintendo's in it for the long haul, and they have the luxury of being able to afford to play their own game rather than going toe-to-toe with the big guys, you know?
I mean, if they can replicate... I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Skylanders is not one of their in-house titles, right? That's a...
Right, right, that's a third party.
Yeah, yeah, if they could replicate that success somehow... I mean, that Skylander shit, I don't even understand it, but every person that I know that has a kid is just in love with that. I mean, if they could replicate that somehow, maybe they have a chance to gain some market share, but I think they're probably relegated to be the Dr. Pepper to the Coke and Pepsi, for the foreseeable future, which is not a bad thing either. I mean, look, you know, it has its place, And I think to the Sony bigwigs' point, I mean, yeah, they're playing their own game, and if that means sticking to a certain niche that they know that they can dominate, albeit a much smaller market share than the other two guys, then that's fine. I mean, if they can be a profitable company by doing that, I don't think that's a bad thing. Plenty of companies around the world do that, and they make a lot of money for their investors. But if they want to step up to the level of, you know, Sony or Microsoft, it's going to take a lot more than a couple thumb drives.
A couple thumb drives. I like that. Yeah. I'll add this too, since we're talking about Nintendo playing their own game. Nintendo's own game also includes the handheld, and you can definitely make a case that tablets and phones are eating into the handheld market, but as handheld game machines go, the 3DS is the machine. Like, Sony's Vita, while I like it, it's a cool machine, is a distant second, and that's it. That's all you have. And from what I understand, they rake money in from the 3DS.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, I see people on their 3DS all over the place, you know, almost wherever I go. So, I mean, yeah, that's probably their cash cow. The problem is, and we sort of alluded to this on the previous episode when we were talking about tabletop games, if I'm a parent and I want to buy my kid something and I have a limited budget, am I going to buy them a 3DS or am I going to buy them a tablet? I think I'm probably going to buy them a tablet. So where does that leave Nintendo, I guess, going forward with the, I guess, proliferation of just these cheap, very powerful handheld devices that everyone is starting to have, even at, you know, under 5 years old.
And we kind of know that Nintendo is going to license their games for tablets at some point. I mean, that is coming.
Yeah, they're going to have to.
So there you have it. I mean, they look at this new market where their handheld is competing with different but similar enough devices in the form of tablets and phones, and they say, hey, we're taking our share of that. We're going to license. We are, in a sense, the prophecy has come true that people were making a couple years ago. We're becoming a software company, but we're also making our own stuff. If you're a diehard Nintendo fanboy and you only want to play Nintendo games on Nintendo hardware, that may change. If you're an investor, you're like happy as hell that they're doing that because, oh good, you're opening a new line of business.
Sadly, buy Nintendo sounds a lot to me like buy American, and we know how that turned out, unfortunately. I mean, I'm the biggest patriot around, but that didn't work so well either.
Oh, appealing to some sense of loyalty on the part of consumers. Like, it's Nintendo, yeah. You gotta support them, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Tom's optimism is such that I can't tell if it's genuine or if he's joking with us, because he just spawned Nintendo losing 80% of the market share they have on handhelds, which is their last bastion of hope, as we're going to chip away at iPads.
Well, I think a better way to put that, and I'll get to what my real sentiments are in a minute, because I am kind of playing like Mario's advocate for this argument. I guess the point is, Brian, like, if you were, again, you're sitting down and you're talking, you're a big investor, and Nintendo is like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to launch another handheld, because there is another handheld in the offing coming from Nintendo, from what I understand. But we're realists. The market is now also occupied by these handheld devices. They're not gaming consoles. You're not going to get the tactile experience of playing on a 3DS, right? Which a gamer like me prefers, is having like sticks and stuff, you know, control pads and buttons. But we recognize this reality. So in addition to launching this new system, we're going to license some of our characters and develop our own games for these other platforms. I mean, what would you feel better about that, or them doubling down like, no, we're ignoring this change in the marketplace, because God knows ignoring CD-ROM worked out really well for us with the N64, so we're going to double down on our own proprietary stuff. Like, purely putting aside sentiments, Brian, like, you understand why that probably makes sense, right?
Well, I don't think ignoring modern graphics cards worked out very well for them either.
That's a good point. Yeah, but I mean, you know, they're, as I've said, they're playing their own game.
Apparently.
Oh, God. Yeah, as far as where I really come down on it, and I think Cam kind of hit on it when he brought up the Buy American thing. At the end of the day, I don't care. I like games. I like Nintendo. I like Microsoft. I like Sony. If one system comes out the clear winner at the end of all this, I'll just play games on that. You know, I care and I don't care. Video games are still enough of a value proposition to me that I buy them, that I play a lot of them. So I've done a little more tabletop gaming, which has taken away some of my time, but that's fine too. I don't know. I still feel like, I won't speak for you, Cam, but Brian and I have discussed this quite a lot. We've lived through at least one golden age of gaming, and I don't get the sense that we're in one now. That said, you know, yeah, I don't really have any dog in this fight. The console war is something that I can observe as a, like, just totally, like, disinterested, detached third party and kind of smile at it. And I hope I come across that way, because that's what I that's what I mean to convey.
Isn't that sad, though?
That I just don't have any passion for it, or...
Yeah.
Well, yes and no.
I punched people for saying shit about Dreamcast.
that's true, Brian. We were militant. Like, we were so on board for Sega and Dreamcast. Like, I don't feel anything like that kind of passion these days. It is sad. It is sad in a certain way. And why do you think that is?
I think, and what I was going to say before is that, I'm putting my Chris hat on because he's not here, so I've got to ask this question, which is something I'm sure he would have asked. Is it because we're older now and that sort of like childhood innocence that we had when we loved those games, a la Star Wars, you know, when we talked about Star Wars and, you know, the episodes 4 through 6 as opposed to 1 through 3, is it just because we're older and just more cynical and more of a dick than we were when we were kids, that we don't have that feeling of a golden age anymore? And maybe kids that are, you know, coming up now are feeling that with these different things?
Well, unfortunately, Brian and I are going to have to show our age now by acknowledging that we were not kids when the Dreamcast came out, but rather...
I was 25 during the Saturn, I mean.
We were very... I don't know, Brad. I think we were bigger dicks back then than we are now, right?
Yeah.
Definitely way more opinionated and prone to fanboyism. Which maybe that's why, Brian, maybe we're like a little more even keel now and we don't really feel the need to invest ourselves as deeply. I don't know. Oh, God. But to answer your question, it is sad. I wish that games evoked the passion in me that they once did, but they just don't. They just don't. And I know you've said as much yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's even, you know, 5-7 years ago, I mean, I was up all night, you know, trying to play through games. And now it's like, well, I guess I'll just eat a sandwich and go to bed instead. it just doesn't translate anymore.
Yeah, I catch myself pulling this like, I don't want to get into this right now. I go do something else.
Right, right.
I never thought that day would come.
No, me neither. Me neither.
But here it is.
Yeah.
So I guess with all that said, and that really only further qualifies us for in-depth yet impartial reporting, where do you guys see the console wars, say, a year from now? However you want to answer that question, ranking the competitors based on where they're going to be in relative market share or whatever. Take that and run with it.
I think Sony, for all of its issues, is doing what it needs to do. I mean, we spoke in the news extravaganza last week about landing Samsung as a licensee for their Gaikai app. And, you know, they're just going to start... I mean, as soon as those Samsung TVs start coming out, they're just going to start inundating those TVs with their games. So, you know, I think that's a good way for them to keep a stranglehold on the lead that they have and add more casual users. So, you know, for all of their problems and all of their issues and all their gaffes and blunders, I think from a marketing business pure metric standpoint, they're doing what they need to do. I still think they need to fire their PR department. But I think the business side of things is firing on all cylinders. So I don't see much changing between the three. I'll say three instead of two.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very kind of you. What about you, Brian?
I think the Samsung deal might do a lot more harm than we're expecting. Generally speaking, there's the current age buyer, and they're buying PlayStation 4, Xbox One, maybe the Wii U. And then there's the, oh, wow, Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 and Wii are so cheap now, I'll finally get all this shit and have a lot of games to play market. And that's a really healthy market. And now their new choice is, I could spend a bunch of money on a PlayStation 3 or a Xbox 360, or I could just upgrade my TV and have it built in.
That's kind of what I was thinking, man. I mean, that's, yeah. You're referring specifically to the Gaikai technology and the Sony licensing thing, or?
The Samsung TVs having Gaikai built into it. And, I mean, I think Gaikai is going to be reasonably inexpensive. It's going to be like a Netflix subscription, correct? Probably more expensive than Netflix, but something similar to that.
And you would basically have Sony's like entire back catalog, PS3 and back, just at your fingertips at that point, right?
Yes. I mean, that kind of eliminates one entire aspect of the market.
Right, but that assumes Sony is trying to keep that market, right? I mean, how many PS3s are they selling, do you think? Or titles, you know, that play on PS3 and before?
Well, I think more importantly is how many Xbox 360s is Microsoft selling? And I haven't looked at the latest numbers, but until recently, it was pretty healthy.
So you think that's gonna kill that secondary market, if you want to call it?
Or? It might skew the secondary market to being Sony fans. So when they do figure out that they can't live without the current gen, you might reap huge benefits from this in a year or two when those people are ready to upgrade.
Yeah.
Oh, so you get them on board with brand Sony by offering them this great low-value gaming experience, and then they transition it to buying your now probably reduced-price hardware, right?
First one's free, man.
Oh, my God, that's great. They're like the 1980s drug pusher at the elementary school.
Yeah.
Ah, good insight there, Brian. I think you're onto something, man.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Well... there you have it. We've got Brian concluding that there is a, what's the word I'm looking for? An infiltration of the consumer mind perhaps underway on the part of Sony.
Yeah, I think you might see a difference this time around. Cam might be right. Maybe no one cares anymore.
I hope not. For me, the real takeaway is I hope people care. Like I want video gaming to stay, and I want console gaming to last a while longer, and maybe that is almost certainly pure just, like, sentimentality speaking.
Yeah.
$400 is still a pretty heavy entry point for, like, a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old. I mean, not that they're buying it, but their parents are buying it for them. And I don't think, as a parent, you could possibly argue with, no, there's no things to ever pick up, there's no games to break.
Yeah, you're
There's
right.
There's no mess in the living room.
And yeah, and I guess that brings up, you know, the point. I mean, Tom, when do you think console games will be completely dead? Or consoles themselves?
I called this at the beginning of this generation. I still think this might be the last one. There might be an ill-conceived next generation after this. But if this Gaikai thing takes off, as Brian suspects it will, and you then see integrated gaming services in, like, everyday appliances, and then even new games are distributed that way, never mind just back catalog of older stuff, we might really see consoles go the way of the dodo, perhaps to be replaced by some sort of hardware modules that bolt on or complement your TV if there is a need for, like, kind of some beefy dedicated hardware still. But the console as appliance in your living room may go away. And that's contrary to definitely Microsoft's and to a lesser extent Sony's and Nintendo's strategy of themselves becoming the set-top box. And this harkens back to an old episode we had. If this stuff gets integrated into your TV, so mom and dad just have to subscribe to games so Junior and little Missy can play, the demise of dedicated consoles could come sooner rather than later.
I think Nintendo is prepared for this. I think they're going to have hardware amiibos. Like, you just plug a Charmander into the side of your TV screen and it adds RAM.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you get the collectability factor and they're functional. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, Brian, I mean, you made the point about Nintendo being ready, which I think was a little tongue-in-cheek, but I think Sony is already ready, and all you have to do is look at their digital distribution of the interview.
Oh, good point. I didn't even think about that.
From the hip, as that may have been, definitely effective.
Yeah, I mean, for everything that I've read is just that they were just scrambling and just somehow hit on a little bit of gold, but I don't know. I mean, it remains to be seen whether or not they've changed, quote-unquote, the landscape of how movies are going to be distributed. I don't know that they did it. You know, I don't know that they can ever recreate the crazy circumstances around the release of the interview. But, you know, you never know.
Foot in the door. I think that's all that matters.
And just sort of back to what we were saying, Tom. I mean, you know, I've always sort of been fascinated by just the steep decline of, you know, CDs and music, you know, how music files just sort of took over and downloads. And I mean, you know, when's the last time you bought a CD? Maybe 10, 15 years ago
yeah.
at best.
Yeah.
And I think the only reason why consoles are still around and console games are still around is because, you know, it's the whole loading factor and the technology just wasn't there to have a competent streaming solution. But now with these smart TVs, I mean, I think the more powerful they get, the closer and closer consoles are getting to the graveyard.
Yeah, so this successful distribution campaign of the interview through, let's say, non-traditional means might be foreshadowing the demise of consoles.
Yeah, I think maybe.
Or heralding it, let's say, maybe.
They're definitely on the way down, that's for sure.
Yeah, no matter how much of a fanboy I present myself as, I do have to agree that unless there's something I'm completely missing, the future for the dedicated console, not looking so bright. So there may be no ultimate winner of the console wars, at least as far as consoles are concerned.
Yeah, win the battle, lose the war, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of an analogy from history, but I can't. I can't think of one in which, like, one side wins a protracted war and then the continent sinks into the ocean. So, but that said, yeah, that's my two cents. That's where I come down on the console wars in general.
Yeah, I think we're all pretty much on the same page.
Cool. Hey, you just reminded me of something though. Speaking of page, I have a really good suggestion for how our listeners can get on the same page with us week after week. Want to know what it is?
What is it?
They can subscribe to our podcast in iTunes or whatever other podcatching software they happen to use, and we would really appreciate a positive review and maximum stars.
We would also really appreciate you liking us on Facebook, following us on Twitter and Instagram, joining our Google Circle, and joining our Nerdstravaganza HQ Facebook group.
And we certainly invite you to check out all of our past episodes on our website, nerdstravaganza.com. We also invite you to email us at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com and to check out our YouTube channel for all of our board game reviews, movie reviews, and other great content.
And with all that said, give peace a chance. Another one in the can.